This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
KYW News Radio and Deborah Heart and Lung Center team up to discuss arrhythmia, diagnosis, treatment, and management. Here's Rasa Kay.
If your doctor tells you your physical has turned up an arrhythmia, a rhythm disorder in your heart, that might cause it to skip a beat right then and there. But cardiac electrophysiologist Dr. Rafael Corbizero explains the biggest concern is, like a realtor says, location, location, location.
And arrhythmias are geographically specific. So it depends on where we are in the heart. In a normal heart, in a young, otherwise healthy patient, there are abnormal arrhythmias that can occur, most common of which is called supraventricular tachycardia. These are abnormal circuits based on the electrical anatomy. They are not life-threatening. They can be life-annoying, and they usually occur in the top or middle part of the heart.
Learn more at DeboraHealthReport.com.
New Jersey's only heart, lung, and vascular specialty hospital, Debora Heart and Lung Center. When it's your heart, demand Debora.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This is Dan Ball on WEEI.
That was the call from Judd Surratt on Nesson, who, by the way, has done a tremendous job taking a near impossible spot from Jack Edwards after many, many years as the voice of the Bruins on TV. Judd Surratt was the voice that got to detail the Bruins' collapse in the third period and eventual loss in the shootout to the divisional rival Ottawa Senators. Unfortunately, and that clip was bad enough, that was not the clip that I would say rang in the ears of Bruins fans the most from yesterday. More on that in a moment. In the meantime, good afternoon and welcome. Thanks for choosing WEEI here on this Sunday, just after 1 o'clock on January 19th, 2025. I'm Dan Ball. Thanks so much for being here. My good friend David Azar is behind the glass with us. We're here with you from 1 until 2:30 because, as you probably heard yesterday as you were driving around, WEEI is your exclusive radio home here in Boston for the NFL playoffs. The first two games of the divisional round came your way yesterday, so we're getting you ready for the next two games with coverage beginning at 2:30 of the Rams and the Philadelphia Eagles. They were just showing a clip on ESPN as the players are starting to kind of get loose and warm up for the game. There's some weather that's coming through, and I also know that we're about to get some weather here in this area. 5 or 6 o'clock, it looks like, when it's going to hit, and then it'll stop overnight. So if you're out there, make sure whatever you got to do on a Sunday to get ready for a Monday, you do it now and you don't save it till later. But if you are driving around and you want to jump in on the conversation at any point, our number is 617-779-7937. You can call that number. You can text that number if you have something to chime in with. Would love to hear from you as we get you ready for another duet of NFL games here on this Sunday. So that clip from Judd Surratt from Nesson from the end of the Bruins game capped off a 6-5 loss in the shootout. First of all, yesterday's game was atrocious. It was a game that neither team's defense and goaltending really deserved to win. Bruins got down 2-0 early. Their defense looked like they had never seen ice, a puck, a stick or anybody wearing a Senators jersey before, the positioning was just atrocious. The second goal that Ottawa scored, the goal that was the Tim Stützle unassisted goal at the 7:35 mark, I think you could count all five white sweaters within a 5-foot radius of each other right in the middle of the slot. And that's not necessarily the way that I would go about defending anybody in the NHL, much less a good player like Tim Stützle. But the Bruins started slow. They were able to battle back. They score three unanswered in, five of the next six goals to take a 5-3 lead, including a goal from Vinny Lattery, who is being put in a position that he probably shouldn't be in. But hey, he's on the scoreboard. That's what matters. You get Pastrnak on the board, Pavel Zacha, Morgan Geekie, Johnny Beecher. Like, you're getting the depth of scoring yesterday that probably, if you just stop the game at about the 12-minute mark, or 12 minutes gone by in the third period, you're probably feeling okay about. You know, your team started off slow. First 10 minutes or so weren't great, but you battled back and you had a lead. And then the comedy of errors at the end of the game. This is not the first and only Boston sports team that we'll talk about in terms of comedy of errors at the end of games and execution in the late part of a game. We'll get to the Celtics and put them in the crosshairs in just a moment, but it was mistake after mistake after mistake. It was poor positioning. It was Charlie Coyle somehow missing an empty net. It was Jeremy Swayman deciding to go for it all and try to score an empty netter of his own. Guys, you're not in a position to be screwing around like that. These are important divisional points. And I was reading Scott McLaughlin's piece on WEEI earlier this morning just to kind of get his breakdown and really recount all of the different mistakes that came one after another after another. So it was bad enough that you made a bunch of mistakes at the beginning to get behind, then battled back, then made a bunch of mistakes at the end, terrible positioning, getting caught out, you know, late changes, long shifts, your defense looks gassed, and you end up getting the game tied on you with 12 seconds left. That's bad enough. Go to overtime, nobody scores. Go to the shootout. Bruins don't have enough individual talent to win shootouts, so they end up losing. That's not really that surprising. If you score in overtime, great. If you get to a shootout, Bruins really don't have much of any shootout-caliber talent other than Brad Marchand, and not even David Pastrnak, because he doesn't have this bag of tricks that he can reach into. He has an incredible shot, and so he scores from time and again, but he's not elite in that. And Ottawa, to their credit, they're an up-and-coming team. Defense is an issue. Goaltending, they've kind of solved that with Linus Allmark, though the Bruins didn't see him yesterday. They do have more talent when it comes to the individual style thing like a shootout. So all that to say this, all of a sudden a trend starts to emerge after the game. Oh, when we were in overtime, a notable name was nowhere to be found. So, diligent as always, the Bruins beat reporters asked Joe Sacco, "Hey, Joe, that guy that wears the C on his jersey, where the hell was he in overtime?"
I don't think we saw Marshy in the overtime. Was he hurting? Or
no,
was
he wasn't hurting. No.
Just a coach's decision there?
Yeah.
Uh-oh. That's not good. So you're telling me that your franchise leader in overtime game-winning goals, Brad Marchand, with 21 goals and 28 total points. So he leads you in overtime goals, leads you in overtime points in his career. Just sorted this quickly. Marchand, Bergeron, David Pastrnak, Torrey Krug, fourth in overtime points. There's a name I miss hearing within the context of the Bruins, but he's going through his own share of injury issues. Anyways, no injuries, no bumps and bruises, no nothing like that. That was a coach's decision to bench your captain in overtime with points on the line in a division game when you're scratching and clawing for every little piece that you can. And you're actively trying to figure out what direction you're going this season. It called to mind comments from the Bruins gala that they had earlier this week. It was Charlie Jacobs who spoke, son of Jeremy Jacobs, ownership of the Bruins, and then Cam Neely. And the two of them had very different answers to the question, well, what's the direction? Where are you going? Where are you headed? What is this all moving towards? Charlie Jacobs was, we're not in this just to get to the playoffs. He touted the fact that they've made the playoffs. I think it was 8 out of the last 10 years or 8 of the 10 years under Don Sweeney, some number to that effect. He said, we're not just in this to be in the playoffs, to be a wild card team, whatever. We're in this to win cups. And then Cam Neely, moments later, says, well, you know, we kind of have two paths that we're getting closer to having to make a decision on. We either are making moves to go for it, and we believe that this team is good enough to compete for a cup, or he said the magic words that you rarely hear a Boston front office executive say out loud, which is, we might have to retool. So you have a disagreement or a lack of understanding on what direction you're going this season. And every point that you get or don't get is a check in the positive or the negative column of what direction you're going this year. And Marchand's not a part of your overtime plan. And this isn't even a long-tenured head coach that's trying to make a statement. This isn't a Claude Julien doing this. This isn't Bruce Cassidy. This isn't even Jim Montgomery, a guy that before getting fired and really falling into disfavor, was a coach of the year, presided over the best regular season team in the NHL of all time. No, this is Joe Sacco, a guy who's trying to coach for the right to be the full-time head coach of the Bruins. And it's the interim head coach that felt so strongly about something with his captain that he decided that, oh, it's not worth having him out there. We have more talent on a team that's bottom 10 in scoring in the league, that we don't want to have our franchise leader in overtime goals and points out there to try to help us get the extra point. And there are two schools of thought on a decision like that. The one, the pro Marchand camp, will go, well, Sacco's an idiot. I don't care what happened. Talent is talent. Goal scoring ability is goal scoring ability. Put him out there and deal with it after the fact. And I understand that, but if it's something that your interim head coach feels so strongly about with your captain that he sits him, I'm all for your head coach having the conviction to do that. And it just calls to mind the umbrella question that I wonder about with this team that's been evident all year. You've now gone through one head coach. You're on to your interim head coach. You've had a lot of deck chairs moving around on your roster this year. Some injuries, some just to poor play. You had the Swayman thing coming in with how much money he's going to get paid versus not. Is he going to be in camp? Is he going to start? How good is he going to be without Linus Allmark? And it's just been ugly. And I have to wonder, where is the culture? Where is the mindset? What's the energy behind closed doors with this group right now? It seems like there's a bit of a leadership gap, is how I'll put it. Not an issue, because you have some veteran players who have been around and done a lot and who are leaders in their own right that are still a part of this roster, but it's been an internal development characteristic of the Bruins since we call this date out, because the retool term we hadn't really thought of since the year that came to mind for me was 2006-2007. In 07-08, you make the playoffs as the 8 seed. You take Montreal to 7 games in the first round. You have that crazy game 6 at TD Bank North Garden at the game. This building is vibrating, call. Marco Sturm scores. All that kind of stuff. That was the year that really launched this era of Bruins hockey that now, I think, is really starting to realistically come to a close, and the window is really starting to shut on just this team being a consistent Stanley Cup caliber team, contender caliber team. So since that point, you've had a consistent churn of younger players coming up under veteran players and a chain of command when it comes to locker room leadership. That's veterans that were part of the team, the Glenn Murray, PJ Axelsons of the world, leading into the leadership group that led you to a lot of success, which was Zdeno Chara and Patrice Bergeron and David Krejci and guys who were part of the earlier year teams like, you know, Johnny Boychuk and, you know, members of this roster that were also from everything that we were presented as just frontward facing fans, not inside the locker room seeing anything, just what we saw from afar, that were good players, hard-nosed players, and tremendous leaders. And then you had the next era that was really led by Brad Marchand that came in. It was Marchand, and at the time, it was guys like Tyler Seguin and Blake Wheeler, and Torrey Krug is another name that comes to mind. And, you know, these guys, you had guys that stuck around that I think were the next wave of Bruins leadership, and Marchand is chief among those, which is why he wears the C right now. And then you had guys that weren't, and that's why you saw players like Seguin and Wheeler, despite being otherworldly talented, moved out of town. I think it was identified that though they're good players, they did not fit in what the culture of the Bruins was supposed to be. And you brought in guys with trades like, to pull a name out of a hat, Rich Peverly, for example, and to a lesser degree, Louis Erickson, though I think that was a move that just kind of blew up completely. But my point being, you had a chain of command and a development style within the Bruins that promoted leadership, good character, positive voices for the culture. And I just don't know if that's continued because you have not drafted well, you have not developed well, and the two players that you could point to and say, well, these are the next in line to be the next leaders of the Bruins as Brad Marchand starts to age and get to the other side of his career, Charlie McAvoy, David Pastrnak. Good players, but mistake-prone players, guys that run into issues. And for McAvoy, it's positioning and turnover-related. For Pastrnak, it's really not loving the whole physical side of the game. So it's something that's far more complex to me than just, well, you're not good enough on the ice. Winning cures all. So if you had more talent, more scoring ability, then maybe that would solve some of these issues. But you were so good in terms of drafting, developing, and promoting guys that fit the culture that you were going for as the hard-nosed, grounded pound. This is a football metaphor, but 3 yards in a cloud of dust kind of hockey team that you were, and I just don't think you have that now. So what you have is remaining members of the old guard, or I guess really remaining member, which is Marchand. You have young and promising players that, despite being very good, haven't quite stepped into those same leadership roles. And then you have a bunch of spare parts. You have a bunch of players that you've either acquired from elsewhere in the league, be it a Lindholm and a Zadorov. You know, there are plenty of examples from past years of guys who you've brought in from out of town. And then you have guys that you've kind of tried to draft and develop, and they're good players, but they're not superstars. And because of that, they may not be in the positions to be leaders. I mean, Mason Lorai is a good player. Morgan Geekie is becoming a useful player. Pavel Zacha is having a pretty good year in terms of goal scoring. He was the recipient of a sick power play goal yesterday as Boston was kind of starting to turn their engine over midway through the first. But you don't have the internal development of your leaders that can supplement a guy that has kind of been just anointed the leftover leader, which is Brad Marchand. So I give credit to Joe Sacco. If he identified something was wrong with your captain and the way that he was playing or whatever's going on behind closed doors that we don't know about, and I know it's been a hot topic of conversation on this station in the last week or two of what is going on behind closed doors. Something's up. Something's amiss, and I identify it mainly as there's just something different in the way that successful Bruins teams were constructed and the way that their culture was built and what's going on right now with this team. And unfortunately, that's not an overnight fix. That's not an aggressive trade deadline away from being fixed. That's a, oh,
we may not have the right mix. And when Cam Neal uses the term retool, that may be the thing that solves this issue faster than let's just throw a bunch of draft picks at a trade and try to bring in some talent. Now, on the other side of that, and I know we have to take a break, so we'll take one in just a few moments and get to my good friend David, who's going to tell us what's trending. That'll all happen in a few moments. Now, in the same vein, if you trade draft picks or you try to trade a couple, you know, a couple players who financially equate to a JT Miller and Elias Pettersson, names that we've heard as trade targets for the Bruins. You add in that center that you're looking for, strengthen the center depth that post Bergeron and Krejci has been pretty bad. Maybe that sparks your offense to the point where you start to win more games. If you continue to get better play from Swayman, who I know wasn't fantastic yesterday by any stretch, but numerically speaking, he has been better than the beginning of the season. Maybe winning solves all of this, and you can let bygones be bygones, and you'll figure it out. But I don't know. I still don't think you're not an Elias Pettersson, JT Miller away from being a true cup contender. I think your issues run much deeper than just adding one player to your offense. And B, now you're taking another player from out of town, trying to shoehorn him into what you're already kind of trying to construct on the fly, this core of guys that have come from different places within the league, and just go, all right, everybody get along. Here you go. Build the culture on the fly. Here's one guy that was part of championship teams in Boston. He's going to try to teach the whole roster what it means to be a champion in Boston. I just don't like that. I don't think it works. So as much as it would be painful and disappointing to say, hey, our window is closed, let's recoup some assets, let's sell off some players who have expiring contracts, recoup draft picks, open up cap space, and start to rebuild around some of our younger players, as much as that would suck, I don't think your alternative is going to yield you the cup that you've been going for since 2011. So a lot of decisions to be made and a lot of conversation around the Bruins, and a tough one yesterday, 6-5 the final, a shootout loss for the Bees against Ottawa. We'll transition to the court, where another team had a rough go at the end of the game when trying to close a game with a lead. That's the Boston Celtics. Yes, it was exactly what the doctor ordered for the Celtics on Friday. Saturday, however, looked like the team might have just run out of gas. We're talking Celtics basketball on the other side of this, but before any of that, my good friend David Azar tells us what's trending.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
All right, let's get you caught up on what's trending here on WEEI and WEEI.com. The Bruins lost in a shootout against the Ottawa Senators yesterday afternoon. The final score was 6-5. The team gave up two goals late in the third period for the Senators to force overtime. Jeremy Swayman had 39 saves in the loss. The Celtics also ended up in the loss column last night after falling to the Hawks 119-115 in overtime. A late mistake from Drew Holiday in the fourth quarter led to the Hawks forcing overtime. Jaylen Brown suffered a head injury but was able to finish out the game. Some baseball news. All-star closer Tanner Scott reached an agreement with, you guessed it, the Los Angeles Dodgers on a four-year, $72 million contract. The Red Sox were reportedly interested in signing Scott to shore up their bullpen. The Patriots have requested an interview with Chargers passing game coordinator Marcus Brady and have completed an interview with Bears interim head coach Thomas Brown for their vacant offensive coordinator position. NFL insider Ian Rappaport named Josh McDaniels as the favorite to land the job. The Kansas City Chiefs advanced to their seventh straight AFC Championship game after defeating the Houston Texans 23-14. The Washington Commanders are moving on to the NFC Championship game after shocking the world and beating the Detroit Lions 45-31. This is Washington's first NFC Championship appearance since 1992. Stay tuned later in the day for Westwood One's coverage of the NFL Divisional Round right here on WEEI. Coverage begins at 2:30 p.m. with the Los Angeles Rams and Philadelphia Eagles facing off for the second spot in the NFC Championship game next Sunday. I'm David Azar. That's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed.
Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Nerds!
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen. Odyssey celebrates St. Patrick's Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Dan Ball on WEEI.
617-779-7937 is the phone number. If you want to call, if you want to text, you can jump in on the conversation as we move from the Bruins to the Boston Celtics. And if it was just Friday night's game for the Celtics, there wouldn't be much to talk about, quite honestly. They played tremendously well against Orlando. 121-94 was the final. Exactly what the doctor ordered. Against a team, no less, in Orlando that has given Boston some kind of issues. So many fits recently. Just in terms of how they play the game, the physicality of the way that Orlando plays, the way that they rebound, the way that they box out and defend aggressively and yada, yada, yada. When these two teams played each other recently, it was a 108-104 win for Orlando, and it was just a really uncomfortable day shooting for the Celtics. That was not the case at all on Friday. They played great. Then you turn around and play the Atlanta Hawks. And we knew going in that Kristaps Porzingis and Al Horford were probably only good for one of the two games in that back-to-back stretch at TD Garden. The specific reporting on Friday, and I got this from our good friend Justin Turpin here at WEEI, he said the Celtics have a clean injury report on Friday against Orlando, and then the note was both Al Horford and Kristaps Porzingis will play in the first game of the back-to-back. The unstated second part of the sentence was, but you probably won't see them in the second game of the back-to-back, and that's exactly what happened. So Luke Kornet in the starting lineup. More minutes for Sam Hauser. Peyton Pritchard plays 33 off the bench. He has 20. And despite being on the second half of your back-to-back, despite being shorthanded, you're playing a team that's over 500 in Atlanta that's having a bounce-back season. And you know Trae Young is going to be able to score. They have some sneaky scoring depth coming off the bench. DeAndre Hunter's been a starter in this league for a while in different places, but he's kind of become a nice supplementary piece for Atlanta this season. At the end of the game, again, and I know we just got off of 20 minutes talking about how the Bruins couldn't close a game. That's exactly what happened for the Celtics yesterday. It's exactly what happened. Jrue Holiday said, I think we had the game won. I've got to make some better plays, make a better pass to JB, or maybe if I hold on to the ball and get free throws, it's a different situation. And Joe Mazzulla spoke specifically about his team's late game execution, because this isn't the first time that we've had to have conversations about late game execution, about the way the Celtics close games, about defense down the stretch, about just being able to hang on and clutch up
in the big moments, so to speak. So, David, if we have that sound of Mazzulla talking about execution, here is what he said in the post game.
I just didn't think, we executed our best down the stretch. And, that's the lesson. You know, we got to get better at our late game execution, whether it's and again, when you're in a game like this, it's so easy to just look at those last segments. Yeah, we had a chance to win it, and we didn't execute it. That's a fact. But we also had a 15-point quarter in the second quarter because it was a little bit of our spacing, our execution, and we missed shots. And so the low-hanging fruit is to focus on that last few plays, which, yeah, are important. You have to execute those, and we didn't. But there's still plenty of plays throughout that we could get better at that in a close game like that are, we have to learn from. And, you know, the second quarter is another one of those things.
So, numerically speaking, it's been ugly. The defensive rating in the clutch, which is the final 5 minutes of the fourth quarter or overtime when the score is within 5 points, the Celtics ranking is 118, which ranked 25th out of the 30 teams in the NBA. In the fourth quarter of losses this season, they sit 29th in defensive rating, 28th in offensive rating, and dead last in net rating, minus 27.6, a night and day difference from a season ago. Now, there is certainly an argument to be made that this particular collapse could be personnel related. And I also think that there's an argument to be made that a lot of the defensive collapses this season could be loosely tied to the fact that Kristaps Porzingis has been on and off the court almost game in and game out. He's there one, he's not there another. There's part of that there. Drew Holiday has missed some time. There's part of that there. Al Horford is showing some age despite being very productive when he's there. He just can't be on the court playing hard every single time. So when you pull Porzingis out of the equation and you pull Horford out of the equation, let's say Drew Holiday's even a part of it because he was last night, so he gets part of the blame. It's a relatively small and not very physical group. It's an athletic group, for sure, that should be able to keep up when the opposing offense goes through switches and, you know, sets picks and tries to get guys open and things that you do when you're trying to score points, all that. You have the athleticism to be able to keep up, but you don't have a ton of size. So if you have a team that's willing to go to the rack and try to get the paint points and the tough, grimy area points in these crunch times, when you don't have Porzingis, when you don't have Horford, you don't have a ton of size, comparatively speaking. So you can kind of get pushed around in those situations. And it's not a fault of roster construction. It's not a Brad Stevens issue without, I mean, what more can you ask of Brad Stevens in the front office in terms of putting together a roster? And I also think that there's a lot of what's happening now in terms of injury management in December into January into February that I think if we were having the same conversation about this same stretch run in a game in the playoffs in May and in June, I don't think it goes this way. I think you're seeing Porzingis. I think you're seeing Horford. I think there's a lot of injury management that's happening this year that maybe you didn't have to worry about last year. And you're simply a bit more banged up this year and kind of showing cracks in the foundation that really weren't a part of the equation last year. I think that's certainly part of it. I try when I look at this group more so than the Bruins. I look at the Bruins and I go, there's something significantly wrong here. I look at the Celtics and go, all right, it's not as pretty as it was last year. But, I mean, come on. You're still 16 games over 500. You started the season gangbusters. I think it was 19-4, and now you're 10-9 since. So, yeah, you've certainly come back to earth in a way that we haven't seen in a season and a half. So I understand where the concern there is. But I also look at it and go, I don't think we'd be having these same conversations about guys missing time if this was a 7-game series and you're competing for a spot in the NBA Finals and a championship. I don't. If the Celtics get to that point, which they will, they're talented enough even with the injuries to get to the playoffs and probably host a series, if not two. They probably won't catch Cleveland and the Knicks are going to be an issue, but you should be a top three team regardless. Once we get into May and June, if you're still having these injury issues, okay, then I was wrong. And maybe you did have a bit of a lapse in roster construction, just in that you brought in too many pieces that had too high of a probability of getting hurt. I think it's just, at this point, manage the injuries that you have, which are more prevalent this year than they were a year ago. Take your lumps. Have your issues down the stretch when you're playing shorthanded on so many nights and you're playing with so many different combinations of players, because defending is a, because it's a five-man unit and there's not a ton of space with which to work, there's a communication element and an unspoken understanding of where the other players are going to be on the floor. So if you have rotating personnel more than you don't, maybe you are a step behind, because the communication, the understanding, the unspoken communication, the body language, the, hey, the, if you go here, I'm going to go here, just split second knowledge, maybe it's not there as much. And maybe that's where you have teams taking advantage down the stretch, where when they start to understand, this is where we can take advantage. This is where your weak spot is. This is your two or three man unit within your five man defense that don't quite click, that aren't quite on the same page. I just think there's more of that. And coming off of a year where us as Celtics fans were spoiled, it's unusual to see them look human. But I'm willing to believe, until I'm proven wrong, that the personnel-related defensive lapses and your collapses down the stretch are something that is knowingly and willingly being managed by the coaching staff, if that makes sense. You're trying to get as much out of you can out of a Porzingis and out of a Horford in the regular season, and you'll take the ugly play that you get sometimes when you're managing injuries and bumps and bruises and just the freshness of those players. You'll take that in January to make sure that you don't have that in May. I do believe that when we get to the final 6 weeks to a month of the regular season, these game in and game out, game on and game off trends for Porzingis and Horford will start to end. And I hope for it. I believe it's going to happen. And if it doesn't happen, then, well, maybe this year isn't the year for a repeat. But I really do believe that you'll start to get to the point where, okay, now it's time to kick it into high gear. We've been coasting. We've been competitive. We're a good team. Now we're a great team. Now we're going to spend a month where, save for a game here or there, we have the same starting five unit on the floor. And I hope that everybody's healthy enough to do that. And I do believe that that the mass amount of changes to the rotation for Joe Mazzulla is knowingly and willingly being done in order to preserve these guys for the stretch run. And you hope that you get a month to 6 weeks worth of the same lineup on the floor. So all of a sudden, these issues with communication and positioning and who's going to be where when just kind of snap your fingers and they disappear. That's what I'm hoping for. In the meantime, you're winning enough. You're winning essentially two out of every three games. You're still one of the powerhouses in the league. And I think there's an understanding in the league that the Celtics do have more to give. And I would have to imagine that there's an understanding and an expectation that what we're seeing at 29-13 and 15-8 at home is not the best of the best for this team yet, and we're not seeing the best of the best yet. At least that's what I hope, because if this is just a team that magically, after winning a championship, forgot how to play like a winner in the fourth quarter, I would be stunned. I don't think it's reasonable. I honestly don't think it's reasonable to think that all of a sudden this group that's essentially exactly the same from a year ago just forgot how to defend or doesn't put forth the same effort and coast to the end because, we won a championship. Why do I have to try in the fourth quarter of a game in January? That doesn't seem like this group. I just think it's purely personnel-based. And so there may be another, where are we now, January 19th? There may be another month and a half to 2 months worth of a couple efforts that kind of make your skin crawl. A couple fourth quarter collapses that make you wonder if this team has the same kind of potential that they did a year ago. As long as you're preserving the playoff ability of a Horford, a Porzingis, guys that you know are dealing with their bumps and bruises right now, then I think you're doing it in good faith, and you can absorb some of these rough endings to games, and you should be fine when the calendar flips to April and then into May. If you want to jump in on the conversation again, 617-779-7937. The Patriots have already started to churn through their coaching staff. Mike Vrabel, I don't know if you've noticed, if you follow them on social media, he's kind of the face of the franchise right now. And it seems like he's already starting to pull the strings to try to change over this franchise very quickly. We update you on the latest and greatest from the Patriots coaching staff as they try to turn things around in 2025. And we do that right after this.
Kickstart your new year with a rewarding career at the HK Group. HK is the leader in heavy construction and contractor site materials with over 80 locations across Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware. HK offers a wide range of opportunities, including heavy equipment operators, CDL drivers, mechanics, site supervisors, engineers, and project managers. 100% paid benefits designed to promote healthy living, financial stability, and career growth. The HK Group does not discriminate. Apply today at hkgroup.com. It's your future opportunity.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. Five-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
StreetEasy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, StreetEasy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knix, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knix Menswear, your friend in style.
So I read in USA Today that the majority of people stop GLP-1 weight loss injection shots in a year. Now, what's concerning is if you get off GLP-1s, there's a real chance you can gain all the weight back. The solution? Almacid, a natural superfood protein shake. University studies show it optimizes your metabolism so you can lose weight easily, and Almacid has been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Use Almacid with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at almacid.com. That's almased.com.
Dan Ball on WEEI.
He was an a-hole, but he was our a-hole. That is what potential future co-worker of Mike Vrabel, Josh McDaniels, had to say in a recent podcast appearance. Dan Ball with you here on WEEI. Thanks so much for being with us. Don't forget, coverage of the divisional round begins at 2:30 here on the station with the Rams at the Philadelphia Eagles. Kickoff, I believe, is at 3. And then at 6:30 or immediately following the end of that game, you have coverage of Baltimore and Buffalo out in Orchard Park as the entire Northeast and this area around here gets ready to get pummeled by snow, apparently. So a couple things before we get into the Patriots. So, David, you mentioned Tanner Scott just signed with the Dodgers, right?
Yep, unfortunately.
So Roky Sasaki signs with the Dodgers. Then Tanner Scott signs with the Dodgers. So I saw this floated by Jared Carabas on Twitter. What if the rest of the 29 teams in Major League Baseball just seceded and formed their own league?
I wouldn't be opposed to it at this point. I have many takes on the Dodgers, which we probably don't have time for, but it really just, I'm not even interested in watching this year.
Like, yeah.
It is so, the Dodgers are just so far ahead of everyone else. It's kind of ridiculous.
It's so annoying, and I appreciate you chiming in and sharing that, because it's every player. It's every single player. I was convinced for the longest time that Juan Soto was going to the Dodgers, that they were going to find a way. The only thing that gave me pause is that Soto was very clearly in it for as much money as soon as possible. That was pretty much seemed to be the goal from the moment that he was offered an extension by Washington and then didn't sign it and then was traded and then went to San Diego and didn't sign and was traded and then went to the Yankees and didn't sign and went to free agency. All of that with Scott Boras seemed to be geared towards, all right, I want as much money up front as I can. So he wasn't going to defer $690 of his $700 million contract or whatever it ended up being. But Ohtani, Betts, Freeman, Teoscar Hernandez, Max Muncy, Will Smith, Michael Conforto, Tommy Edman, and Ha-Seong Kim to play second base. They just traded Gavin Lux, who was a top free agent, or excuse me, a top prospect at one time and was the guy the Red Sox should have got in the Mookie Betts trade, but I digress. Then Blake Snell, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, Tyler Glasnow, Tony Gonsolin, Roky Sasaki, and Dustin May, with Tanner Scott, Michael Kopech, Blake Treinen, Evan Phillips, and a couple other relievers, and Ryan Brazier in his weird head tilt at the back of that bullpen. Go away with that roster. Go away. I'm sick of you. This is ridiculous, and it just pisses me off even more as a Red Sox fan that every single time I see, oh, the Red Sox have an interest in blah, 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 A, they're not going to sign with the Red Sox, and B, they're probably just going to sign with the Dodgers anyways, and they're going to go be teammates and best friends with Mookie Betts, as I have to have that shoved down my throat every single year for the rest of my life. Anyways, a note on that, and apparently TikTok is being restored in the United States now. So the big TikTok ban was less than a day, and so hopefully, I don't know how everybody spent their time from last night through, I don't know, an hour ago, but apparently it's slowly being restored in the United States, and there's going to be some kind of legal intervention on Monday when the inauguration happens. So that's all going to come right at a great time. So everybody's going to be in a great mood. So so Tanner Scott, left-handed reliever, guy the Red Sox definitely could have used at the back end of their bullpen, signs with the Dodgers, of course, as does Roky Sasaki, and TikTok is back. Okay, back to the topic at hand, which is the New England Patriots. Change in the organization is fully underway, and it was kind of spearheaded after the firing of Gerard Mayo and the hiring of Mike Vrabel. All of a sudden, things went quiet as it appeared as though the Patriots were actually starting to do their due diligence on the rest of the hiring process, which is a great thing because there's certainly a faction of Patriots fans that believe that Vrabel was the guy weeks before the end of the season, and it was just, let's do as much as we can to satisfy the Rooney rule and show that we're actually quote-unquote interviewing people. Let's get another guy in the building. I don't know, pick a name. Ben Johnson. He seems like he knows football. Let's say that we interviewed him and took it seriously. And let's just hire Vrabel, like I would imagine the Crafts believe they should have done a year ago. So that all happened pretty hastily, as you notice that, oh, the other teams that have head coach vacancies actually seem to be kind of waiting out the playoffs and seeing what happens with Cliff Kingsbury. And, well, now that the Lions are done, you have Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn and all that. I'm not here to criticize or say that's a good or bad move. Not here to criticize the move. It's done. It's over. It happened, and it's not a surprise. You made the safe move, and that's where I'll stop on that one. All of a sudden, it got quiet as, other than the news that Ryan Cowden was coming over from the Giants, there really wasn't much. And then on Friday, the Robin Glazer domino falls, and it's announced that after nearly two decades in the organization, that Robin Glazer has announced that she is resigning from her position. And that is the phrasing that we were given. I don't know who intervened and said what. I don't know if Mike Vrabel had any say in that. But it's interesting timing, I'll say that, for a resignation when your new head coach and the guy that's been all over social media and per Adam Schefter is quote-unquote the man in terms of making organizational decisions. We, about a month ago, heard the term football czar from Tommy Curran. It certainly appears that Mike Vrabel is your football czar and also happens to be the head coach. We don't have it confirmed outwardly, but we heard it from Schefter, and that's about as good of a national NFL source as you can get, that he's going to have the final say. He'll probably be leading and making the final decision on the draft with the help of Cowden and Elliot Wolf and whoever else is still going to be there in a couple months' time. But he'll be the one that's making the decision, and I have to imagine that he was at least consulted on what ended up happening here. Then some of the more natural new coach progressions started to come out on Friday night. Tight ends coach Bob Bicknell, running backs coach Taylor Embry, wide receivers coach and assistant wide receivers coach Tyquan Underwood, all moving on in 2025. Six assistants in total won't be back. Pair of defensive coaches, director of skill development Joe Kim and defensive assistant Keith Jones Jr. won't be returning as well. So the churn at the lower rungs on the coaching ladder has already started as the team looks to make decisions at the coordinator's positions. Then the Patriots began their interview process. Tuesday, they interviewed Chicago Bears interim head coach Thomas Brown for their offensive coordinator position. They did the same thing with Marcus Brady, passing game coordinator for the Los Angeles Chargers. Now, I think it's important to note, coming off of a couple of weeks ago where Pep Hamilton and Byron Leftwich were interviewed very quickly, so quickly, in fact, that they were both put in the same graphic by the Patriots social media staff. Hey, we've interviewed both these guys. I think it's important to note that the Patriots have now satisfied the Rooney Rule and can now pursue offensive coordinator candidates at will. I'm not going to say guys that they actually want. That was how it was phrased by phrase, and I can't remember who phrased it that way. But I believe it was Ian Rappaport who phrased it like, "Oh, now that they've satisfied the Rooney Rule, the Patriots can interview head coaches that they actually want." I don't think it's quite that that strict, but I mean, there are decent resumes with these guys. Marcus Brady, passing game coordinator, hard to ignore the, let's say, regular season progress that Justin Herbert made as a quarterback in this league. Thomas Brown, interim head coach. If you want to have a guy who you consider to essentially be the head coach of the offense, why not get a guy with actual head coaching experience? I know it wasn't a great year in Chicago, but I don't think that's Thomas Brown's fault. Matt Eberflus, if he was in the building, that would be a significant issue, but it's not. So you've now done essentially the exact same thing that you did for the head coach interviews with your offensive coordinators, where you've interviewed two candidates of color, two minority candidates, satisfied the Rooney Rule as is stated by the NFL, and that allows you to now continue your interview process. To me, it really seems like you're just copy and pasting your process to get Josh McDaniels in the building. That's certainly what it feels like. You literally just did it 2 weeks ago. And that's fine, because you've already illustrated by hiring Mike Vrabel and giving him all the power that you're not willing to accept that the Patriot way is no longer the right way of doing business. You still believe that Patriots alumni, players and personnel who have been in the building in past years are going to be the ones that right the ship in New England and bring them back to a Super Bowl contending franchise. And if you believe that, then you're certainly sticking to your guns by hiring McDaniels. You've already done it once. You might as well do it twice. Is that the way that I would have gone about it? No, it's not. Because you have to show players around the league that you are a modern, forward-thinking, aggressive franchise in the NFL. Mike Vrabel, successful at the beginning of his tenure in Tennessee. Very well-tenured coach, been around, worked in a lot of different in multiple different organizations, played for the Patriots, hard-nosed guy, culture guy, character guy, got it. He's a hard ass. He's a guy who will resonate with a certain kind of player, but not all players for sure. He's going to ask a lot out of his players, and some will be all for that. I want to go play for this guy. I want to work my hardest to be part of this culture. Some are not going to like that. And the hiring of McDaniels is an extension of that mindset. You're going to have a very tough, hardworking, hard-nosed football team in New England with those two guys leading the charge. And that's a good thing. I think it's going to maximize the most that you have on your current roster. You're going to get the most out of the Patriots players that you currently have in the building. And that's a good thing because there's going to be much more accountability. Your practices are going to be different. The expectations for how you carry yourself on and off the field and on the radio are going to be a lot different for these destination for free agents and high skill players. And does a Mike Vrabel, Josh McDaniels tandem versus a Ben Johnson and insert name here tandem give you a better chance to entice players who maybe aren't all in on the I want to have my you-know-what's busted 24-7, 365? I don't know the answer, but you've committed to it. You've committed to the fact that you're going to run it back with guys, familiar faces, guys that have been in the building, guys that know the Patriot way, guys that were underlings in one way or another of Bill Belichick. And whether it's the right move or not remains to be seen. It's the safe move. It's the move you know. It's the devil you know. That's what you've chosen to do with your head coach. It certainly seems like it's just a matter of moments before they announce that it's McDaniels, and they've done the exact same thing at the offensive coordinator position. You're not innovating. You're not changing. And I do have to wonder how the rest of the league and the free agents that you so desperately need to entice to come to your franchise are going to perceive this direction for the Patriots. You are improving. That's important. You're improving at that position. And if you bring in McDaniels, conventional wisdom says that you should be able to improve there too. But will the rest of the league think that as you need to rebuild this roster? That certainly remains to be seen. The Patriots are fully into offseason mode. There's a handful of teams that aren't quite there yet. A duet of games coming up on this Sunday in the NFL as divisional weekend continues. We'll recap what happened yesterday to then preview what's going to be on the airwaves here on WEEI in just about a half hour. As we move into the 2 o'clock hour on WEEI, we're back with more right after this.
Dan Ball. Dan Ball. On WEEI.
What a year it's been for the Washington Commanders. Taking down the Detroit Lions on the road. Jaden Daniels, rookie quarterback, new defensive-minded head coach. Interesting. Kind of makes you think. Welcome back here on WEEI. Dan Ball with you just after 2 o'clock here on January the 19th, 2025. Getting you ready for NFL divisional round football. Coverage of the Rams and the Eagles begins at 2:30 right here on WEEI. The number is 617-779-7937. Let's go to a fellow Dan. Danny is in the car. Good afternoon, Danny. How are you?
Good, sir. How are you?
Doing well.
I apologize. Just going through the car wash. First time talking to you. Thank you, buddy. All right. In regards to Vrabel.
Yeah.
I think it's, you know, right guy, right time, right place, all of that good stuff. Concerned about his overall record. But I think he's the right guy at this time. And is there any, can you enlighten me on what happened down there in Tennessee in regards to ownership and why he left? Because his overall record sort of scares me.
Right. Danny, thank you for the call, and I'll explain that one as concisely as I can. So there certainly was there was a butting of heads between Vrabel and the new general manager that they brought in towards the end of his tenure, Rand Carthon, and specifically the direction that Vrabel believed the franchise should go in terms of adding pieces and being more aggressive and trying to keep their playoff window open versus where I think Rand Carthon and maybe others within the front office wanted to go, though we don't have those specific names, trading A.J. Brown and kind of taking away some of the pieces around the team to be successful. And I think it was just a fundamental misunderstanding of where the coach believed that the roster could go versus where the front office wanted the roster to go. And that led to a split. There were already some issues that were festering before that GM change happened. And I think that the knowing removal of pieces with Brown being right among them was a big reason for the split that ended up with him being let go. So if you allow the head coach to also be the football czar and the decision maker, then conventional wisdom states that you shouldn't have this issue because unless you're a split personality, then you shouldn't be disagreeing with yourself. So that should take any of that any of that type of issue out of it. The only issue that you'd have is if there was a disagreement between Mike Vrabel and either Robert or Jonathan Kraft on the direction and the financial aggression and the drafting and the development. And if there was a disagreement between ownership and Vrabel, that's where you'd have any kind of issues. But based on the way that it seems like the Patriots have structured all of the football operations around this one guy, you should be able to avoid any of the different schools of thought between coaching staff and front office with the way that they've done it. So you should be protected there. And I also want to clarify something on what we spoke about just a few moments ago, and I appreciate Danny's call and saying that he's the right guy at the right time. I'm not necessarily criticizing the result. I think that you had a significant issue in terms of accountability in the Patriots locker room under Gerard Mayo, and it's I'm not even saying that's something that Mayo knowingly did. I just don't think he was equipped to be the kind of leader for a young team and a young core and young leaders that they needed. So it was too much of I'm your best friend and not enough of I'm your coach, I'm the leader, you do what I say. So given the fact that that seemed to be one of, if not the most glaring issues, you know, other than talent, with the Patriots last season, I think that Vrabel, out of all of the candidates that you could have brought in, fixes that issue the best. I'm not criticizing the result. I am criticizing the process that led them to the result. If you went through a comprehensive process, heard from different candidates, got different ideas, and, you know, and kind of widened your scope of who you want to talk to just in terms of the best available football minds, and then landed on Mike Vrabel, fine. But you started the race and finished the race in a second. It's the Simpsons meme of the guy coming in, putting his hat down, and then turning right around, picking his hat up, and walking back out the door. Like, that was your process. It wasn't even a process. I think your process was done before you fired Mayo. And I can't help but look at the fact that you've now satisfied the Rooney Rule and are quote-unquote interviewing offensive coordinators and go, you're just doing the same thing with McDaniels as your offensive head coach. Maybe it's going to work. I don't know. Again, if you get Vrabel and McDaniels, I'm not criticizing the result. I think those are two very good coaches, and you're not going to have a problem with accountability under those two. That's for damn sure. But the process is broken. It's a sham. What Andy Hart says, it's a bag job. And I don't think you're doing right by your franchise and by your roster by treating it like that. However, you got your guy. He's shown that he can lead very good football teams. And I would also have to imagine, and he spoke about this in his press conference, and then when he sat down with the Patriots.com guys, you know, he spoke about the mistakes that he made. He spoke openly about it and the lessons that he's learned. And he spent a year in the Cleveland Browns front office and around their coaching staff. And I'm sure he saw a lot of good and a lot of bad in 1 year in terms of how to lead a team and how to try to keep the train on the tracks. I mean, the Browns, despite all of the Deshaun Watson nonsense, were still competitive, fielding a team. Wasn't a good team, but they were fielding a semi-competitive team. Towards the end, not so much, and he saw all of that. So, again, the result yielded a good candidate, and I think it was only a matter of time before they did hire him. But one team solved their coaching issue in like the span of a couple days after, by the way, firing Bill Belichick, or, you know, mutually parting of ways, however they characterize it, and then naming Mayo the head coach, then, like, literally the next day. All of this being 3 days after the season. You rushed it last year. It stunk. You rushed it this year. You did get a better candidate, a guy that has coached games, but you rushed it at what cost, necessarily? Even if you ended up with Vrabel, you didn't actually really have any meaningful conversations with anybody other than Ben Johnson. And apparently he quote-unquote impressed in his interview, but were you even in a position where being impressed by a candidate would have changed your mind? Certainly doesn't seem like it. I think he could have said, I have magic beans that I will plant in the ground at the 50-yard line at Gillette Stadium, and that is how we're going to win every single Super Bowl for the next decade, and you still would have hired Vrabel. And that's okay. But I can't help but be a little bit worried that I saw this same rushing of the process last year and it stunk. And then you're doing the same thing again. And you're doing it again with your offensive coordinator just to keep it in-house. Just to keep it in-house. You will win more games under Mike Vrabel. But again, your process was shoddy. Not the way I would have wanted to go about it. We came in with a clip of the Commanders ending their game victorious on the road against the Detroit Lions in the divisional round to kick off two games yesterday. It was the Chiefs 23-14 over the Houston Texans. Significant to some that Patrick Mahomes took a safety at the end of the game. I certainly apologize if you were on the wrong end of that bad beat. But the Commanders just balled 28 points in the second quarter alone, and they were able to ice the game with another 14 in the fourth quarter to win on the road. And I mean, that is certainly something to strive for. I think there are a lot of comparables. Your rookie top of the class quarterback in Jaden Daniels and Drake May, your defensive minded head coach hire in that case Dan Quinn, and in this case Mike Vrabel, certainly a better roster in Washington, certainly a blown up and redone but pretty strong front office in Washington with an owner that's willing to spend and an owner that's trying to modernize and change their ways and make Washington a preferred destination. So what can the Patriots learn from the Commanders? I think there's a lot. I really do. Now, you add some talent that was already in place, guys like Terry McLaurin, who certainly does not exist on the Patriots, that you're going to have to now retroactively try to find. But in terms of culture, in terms of willingness to change, in terms of the continuity between front office and coaching staff, and, hey, in terms of bringing in a defensive-minded head coach and a really strong, younger offensive coordinator to work with a young quarterback, I don't know who this year's Cliff Kingsbury would be for you. There is not a clear example, but it's just an interesting comparison. For Detroit, meanwhile, oh boy, you had your shot last year. Didn't capitalize. You lost before getting to the Super Bowl last year to San Francisco. You go 12-5 last year, led by Dan Campbell. Get all the way to the conference championship game. You beat the Rams, beat the Bucks, lose by 3 to the 49ers in the 2023 season. Now this year, you get to the divisional round, 15-2, unreal. Lost Aiden Hutchinson, which is a big part of this. But now you flame out in the divisional round, and it looks as though at least one, if not both, of your coordinators are gone. Ben Johnson is for sure getting a job. I'd be a little surprised if Aaron Glenn didn't get one as well. Even with what happened in these playoffs, I think both of those guys are still prime candidates for the turnaround that you just underwent in Detroit. So what does Detroit look like next year with Dan Campbell, with a very good roster, but different coordinators, and now coming off of 2 years in a row where you've won at least 12 games and still flamed out? I don't know. Interesting question, but those were two of the four games in the divisional round. The other two are happening today, beginning with the Rams and the Eagles at a rainy and cold and damp-looking Lincoln Financial Field as I'm watching it on the countdown to kickoff on ESPN right now. It looks cold in Philly right now. But that's not going to stop them from playing. Eagles and the Rams at 3. Our coverage here on EEI begins at 2:30. Then we'll get you right into coverage of Rams and Bills at also going to be cold and rainy and disgusting. 19 degrees at kickoff. Highmark Stadium, both of those games here on the station, beginning in just a couple of moments. We'll wrap things up and get you ready for the duet of games here on EEI in just a couple of moments. But before any of that, my good friend David Azer is going to tell you what's trending.
The exclusive home for Patriots Monday and Friday.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
All right, one last time, let's get you caught up on what's trending here on WEEI and WEEI.com. The Bruins lost in a shootout against the Ottawa Senators yesterday afternoon. The final score was 6-5. The team gave up two goals late in the third period for the Senators to force overtime. Jeremy Swayman had 39 saves in the loss. The Celtics also ended up in the loss column last night after falling to the Hawks 119-115 in overtime. A late mistake from Drew Holiday in the fourth quarter led to the Hawks forcing overtime. Jaylen Brown suffered a head injury but was able to finish out the game. All-star closer Tanner Scott reached an agreement with the Los Angeles Dodgers on a four-year, $72 million contract. The Red Sox were reportedly interested in signing Scott to shore up their bullpen. The Patriots have requested an interview with Chargers passing game coordinator Marcus Brady and have completed an interview with Bears interim head coach Thomas Brown for their vacant offensive coordinator position. NFL insider Ian Rappaport named Josh McDaniels as the favorite to land the job. Stay tuned later in the day for Westwood One's coverage of the NFL divisional round right here on WEEI. Coverage begins at 2:30 p.m. with the Los Angeles Rams and Philadelphia Eagles facing off for the second spot in the NFC Championship game next Sunday. I'm David Azer. That's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com.
Dan Ball on WEEI.
That was how it sounded when the Ravens beat the Pittsburgh Steelers to get to the point where they are today, which is taking on the Buffalo Bills in the NFL's divisional round. Three, four minutes before we get you into coverage of Eagles and Rams, the first of two divisional games here today. The Eagles are 6.5-point favorites at home at Lincoln Financial Field today. Over-under total from ESPN Bet currently sitting at 43.5. Both teams, all four teams, quite honestly, are relatively healthy going into this one. Laurel Murchison, Troy Reader, the two players who are out for the Rams on the defensive side of the football. Then Byron Young, defensive tackle, out for the Eagles. So Philadelphia playing in the elements, extremely, extremely successful year. They got Saquon Barkley from the Giants and just got that extra shot in the arm on offense that they needed. You know, it still makes me wonder if they lose what would happen with Nick Sirianni, who has been quite the polarizing figure as the head coach. But they did well in establishing coordinators that could actually hold their own with the Eagles after they lost Jonathan Gannon and Shane Steichen from that really, really good team 2 years ago. They figured it out. Kellen Moore has been a huge part of that. And the Eagles at 14-3 during the regular season. Certainly poised for a big one here. They're coming off of a win against Green Bay. 22-10 was that final. So the defense looks strong. They're looking to do the same thing against the Rams, who go on the road to Chili, Philly today. Then the Ravens and the Bills at Highmark Stadium. This one fascinates me. Baltimore is a 1-point favorite on the road. Buffalo home dogs coming off of their dominant win against the Denver Broncos at Highmark Stadium. But Baltimore, extremely talented, and what fascinates me, it's cold, 19 degrees at the time of kickoff, but Baltimore runs the football, man. Ground and pound, Derrick Henry is going to have a massive, massive game on the ground. And the question becomes, can James Cook and company try to at least stay close to what Derrick Henry is going to do? And then what can Josh Allen make up for in terms of potentially being better than Lamar Jackson, to make up for the fact that Baltimore is going to try to chew clock? They're going to try to hang on to the football in the cold weather, in the windy weather out in Buffalo, because the wind whips through Highmark Stadium. Will Buffalo have an answer for the dominant ground game of the Baltimore Ravens? That certainly remains to be seen, but the way that Baltimore plays offense does work well in this kind of weather, where you're not going through the air raid drill, you're not throwing it around all over the place. Hang on to the football, be responsible with the football. Those are things that have made Baltimore successful this season. They are 1-point favorites, over under total per ESPN Bet at 51.5 going into the game here today. Both teams also pretty healthy. Zay Flowers was listed as doubtful, with Deontay Hardy questionable for the Ravens. The only one questionable for the Bills, Ray Davis, dealing with concussion symptoms, and a long laundry list of defensive players: Matt Milano, Greg Rousseau, Dorian Williams, Taron Johnson, Christian Benford among those who were on the injury report this year, but or this week, I should say, but will play for the Buffalo Bills. Okay, we've got some great football coming up today. Let's get you over to that now. Thanks so much for spending a bit of time with myself and my good friend David Azar here on WEEI. So again, coverage of Rams and Eagles begins at 2:30, which is coming up right now, and then we'll have Bills and Ravens on the station for you beginning at 6:30 or right after the end of that game. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Drive safe if you're moving around the Boston area later tonight. There is some snow coming in, so be safe. Have a great rest of your Sunday. Enjoy coverage of the NFL on Westwood One, which comes up next.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball.
Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over, and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.